from there.
Okay, bro.
Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever to be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I tell you, it has been a tremendous week here. I will say the governor, Jennifer Granholm, received a letter telling her that if she don't remove herself, that they was going to remove her physically from office. And I believe me, I got a big chuckle out of that. I believe me, as a matter of fact, they was talking my language. She have come into the city of Benton Harbor and have done a hostile takeover of our city. And the bad part about this thing, some of the folks here now, they want to fight. You know, all these months that they should have been threatening to come in here and take over our city, now they want to stand up and fight. I'm telling you, it's not too late, but you should have did it when I first brought it to your attention. But I'm always excited. I have my brother Larry on the line. Oh, he's back with my co-host. And I got Ralph on the other line, my other co-host. Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Doing just fine, staying strong and carrying on the struggle, my brother.
Oh, hey, I tell you, you know, Larry, I'm really, really, really happy to have you back. I mean, it's, I tell you, I missed you, man. I have to give it up for you.
Ralph, I missed you and the audience, bro.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. And I tell you, you know, even my friend Libby want to know what happened to you. She want to know that somebody kidnapped you and holding you for ransom because we were getting ready to go out and sell my kids. That's what we're going to do.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
We're going to have to get rid of all of them. We're going to have to land them up, sell them to the Ethiopians, you know. You know, they bad children. So I was going to sell them to the Ethiopians and use that money to bring you home, my brother.
Well, I appreciate the thought.
Yes, absolutely. I'm happy to have you back. Ralph, are you there?
I'm here, and I'm listening to your exchange there. And it's been a while since I've spoken to Larry, but I wanted to tell him that I spoke to his friend, Mr. Fletcher, who introduced Jesse Jackson to the Left Forum in New York. Now, I don't know how you can put this together, Jesse Jackson, Fletcher, Left Forum. Mm. And so-called left. I think Elijah Muhammad got it right. The truest words ever spoken, we put so-called in front of it. And only when you use those words can you understand the so-called English language. Mm. So I did say to Mr. Jackson that I was disappointed that I did not hear one word of the First Amendment or one word about Lynn Stewart, which is the biggest case in front of us in terms of the Patriot Act and all. And I said to Mr. Fletcher, who told lies, he told the abominable lie that Obama never said any of the things we were talking about in terms of health care, jobs, Afghanistan, Iraq, and we just misinterpreted him.
Ain't that something.
And I'm saying, so then when I spoke to Mr. Jackson, I also spoke to Mr. Fletcher, and I says, oh, by the way, Mr. Fletcher, say hello to our friend, Larry Pinckney.
Mm.
What did he say to that?
I said that to Mr. Fletcher.
Yeah, what did he say? What
he
did Fletcher?
He didn't say anything. He just looked at me. And somebody says, well, why did he do that? And I'm saying, well, maybe it's because he and Mr. Pinckney do not see eye to eye on a lot of issues. So that was, you know, so then that was the exchange. But I will say that there were a few of us booed in his during the introduction and during Les Jesse's speech, which to support Obama's health care plan because it was a step in the right direction. And I'm saying, well, it depends on, it was a step in the right direction to the right.
Yes.
Right.
And one of the things
right.
I had said to, I sent an email to a friend who was vacationing in Mexico City last week, or week before last, and I says, enjoy yourself, it's later than you think, because we may find ourselves looking back to the good old days when Bush was in charge.
Mm.
Because this Obama has taken this Bush thing, you know, to the ridiculous.
Wow.
But anyway, tell us about Benton Harbor.
What I want to do, I'm going to read y'all this little article I wrote for the People Tribune in reference to the hostile takeover of the city. And it starts off like this. It's a financial takeover of Benton Harbor. It is a hostile takeover. It's a, if the state could grant us a $5 million fiscal stabilization bond, It will solve our problems, said Benton Harbor City Manager Ron Carter. We can do that, said the state treasurer. This is the person who works for Governor Granholm. He said, we can do that. We can give y'all $5 million as a stabilization bond with no problem. The statement was made during a meeting held in Lansing on March 17th, which I was there. The state was forced to meet after the Benton Harbor City Commission appealed Governor Granholm's takeover decision as the emergency manager would have power to hire, fire, renegotiate labor contracts, and sell property. After the meeting, I found out that the loan list that Benton Harbor is in the red for only adds up to $4 million. One person jokingly suggests that a benefit concert could take care of that amount. One might wonder why a governor who offered little or no leadership within the state would suddenly take over a city which had been in deep poverty for many years. Because of being only $4 million in debt, Ron Carter talked about a 42-point plan to remedy the problem. It seemed obvious that nothing was needed for Benton Harbor but to let him do his job. Mayor Cook said that the main question is if a state emergency manager will sell Benton Harbor more valuable assets such as the water department, the high school, all the lakefront land, anything that's of value. If the state of Michigan were in this to help, they could save us a lot of money and trouble by simply offering financial aid, those bonds that we've been talking about, to the poorest community in Michigan. Several people I spoke with said that Whirlpool has already orchestrated the chaotic financial otherwise takeover, which has been characterized Benton Harbor City government for years. Hopefully, this bully corporation will not again have this opportunity. Benton Harbor has been in financial strife for decades. Why does Governor Granholm choose now to intervene? Could it possibly have anything to do with the new city commissioners? We now have 6 votes, and we're not giving Whirlpool anything. We're not giving them nothing that they want, so now the governor coming in and taking over so they can give her everything they need. As we go to the press, the state have taken over Benton Harbor. They could have taken measures to avoid this, but they are doing what the power structure wants them to do all along. We the people will march on City Hall when the financial manager arrives, and I will be ready.
John.
And I tell you, this is a very, very interesting piece of work here. Someone I don't know where it came from. This came from some kind of person wrote the governor a letter telling her that if she continued doing what she's doing, they're going to remove her physically from her office. Now, I heard a lot of people talk and say a lot of things, but I never heard nobody tell somebody they're going to remove them physically from her office. She said she called the state police on them. I said, if she's telling you, the governor, they're going to remove you physically from your office, you need more than the state police.
No, it's time for citizen's arrest because, you see, what's happening in Benton Harbor is the same thing that's happening around the country. What gains that people have made over the last 80 years or 70 years with unions and white affirmative action, they're taken back. They're privatizing everything. Water, schools, the same thing that you're talking about, the selling waterfront property and buildings is happening, is the desire to happen in San Francisco, in Pelosi's district, where her husband stands to gain much dollars, and the city will lose much in terms of the property they built. They're going to give it practically to private industry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like I said, this is happening all over the country, and they will use any excuse. $4 million is an excuse for a takeover of a city is a joke.
It is.
No, it's worse than a joke. That
Absolutely.
Means they're just going to take what you have developed and take those 80 years of affirmative action, and I'm making a distinction, white affirmative action for the white worker. They're going to take it back. They're going to take it back from all of us.
Mm.
But they're going to take it back from us, those who did not receive affirmative action first.
Wow.
Last hired, first fired.
Always.
And if you follow the structure of the double standard, then you can. America is much easier to look at. And when I'm going to give up the mic for a minute And I'll get back to that in the case of Lynn Stewart.
Okay, well, you know, Larry, I know you want to give a quick comment before we want to talk about Lynn today. And one of the things I want to know, Ralph, did Lynn say she got my letter or not?
Is the last mail I received. Now, listen to this carefully. Friday and Saturday, I received 12 letters from Lynn.
Oh.
I haven't, and one of the letters was dated February the 2nd. They have been playing with Lynn's mail, and I'm shouting. And she, for a week, did not get any mail in except for two letters and a couple magazines. And the two letters that she got in were from somebody, two people from the Midwest, and asked Lynn if she knew of any left-wing training camps that she could recommend to them. And so I'm saying, now, they read every letter that goes in or out. They censor it. These letters got in. Mm. And 2 weeks ago, a postcard with $20 cash got in. And cash, you know, in jail is contraband.
Absolutely.
Reported it instantly. And when she got the letter, she says that they think she's insane. They have nothing on her. So now they're going to try to get something on her in prison. Mm. Can you imagine that? But in spite of that, Lynn is in good spirits, and I would like to report a breakthrough in the case.
Mm.
Anyway, you know, Lynn is in jail under the Patriot Act based on the idea that she made a press release on behalf of her client, the Sheikh, which was forbidden in the SAM, Special Administrative Measures. Now, the penalty for making a press release for her client was stated. If you do not obey these SAMs, you may lose the privilege or the opportunity of visiting your client. Well, she's in jail. She not only lost the opportunity of visiting her client, as they spelled out, because it is merely a prison regulation. And so now she's in jail facing terrorist time, and lo and behold, two other attorneys who were working on the case made press releases before she did.
Mm.
Ramsey Clark and Abdeen Jabbar. Now, Ramsey Clark, ex-attorney general, whose father was a Supreme Court justice, and Abdeen Jabbar, head of the Arab Anti-Defamation League, basically Lebanese out of Michigan, a Lebanese background out of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So now Ramsey Clark gets on the witness stand and names the time and the places and the news coverage he got throughout Europe when he made his press release. And now we find that with this Abu Ghraib carrying on, that the lawyers in Abu Ghraib, the large firms, some of them did everything imaginable. They even gave a list of the prisoners in Abu Ghraib to other prisoners. They talked to them about Afghanistan. They talked to them about the Middle East. All of the things, they talked to them about their case and the evidence against them. All of the things that they weren't supposed to do. Now, Lynn is not against that. She says that's decent lawyering.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened? These lawyers never even got a letter. And Lynn is doing time. So now, We talk about the double standard. You know, one person does it, and somebody else does the same thing and gets in great trouble for it. And I look at the war on drugs. That there's no war on drugs. There's a war on black people.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that there's more drugs going on in the white neighborhood than in the black neighborhood, but all the black people are in jail. Everybody knows the statistic of traffic stops when they're checking for alcohol and drugs. You get a higher percentage of hits in the white neighborhood than you do in the black or Latino neighborhoods. But where do they have all of the stops? In the black and Latino neighborhood. Double standard. So throughout history, you know, the law, you drive your car down the highway, DWB, driving while black, double standard. And as many of the young men in the neighborhoods in New York say, Ms. Stewart, you're not in jail because of that blind man with the turban. You're in jail because of your history of working with us or for us as an attorney. And so here we see the double standard. They say you were set up, and this sure points to it. And the judges who are leading the cheer, the Second Circuit judges who are leading the cheer to get Lynn more time, we find George Walker Bush, the cousin, first cousin of W. Bush, should have recused himself. And we find out, we look into his background, and we find out while he was driving one evening in the rain, he hit a police officer who was wearing rain gear with the illuminating paint on it, and killed him.
No.
Now, they did not even give him a test for drugs or alcohol. He was never charged with anything, no vehicular homicide, but a policeman is dead. Then we find out one of the other judges who was leading the chair to ramp it up to have Lynn do terrorist time. He was the lead counsel for Botswana under apartheid. And Lynn Stewart is known for being of the Nelson Mandela persuasion, refusing to give up armed struggle to liberate oneself. Mm. And she said it on the witness stand. So here's somebody who was representing the apartheid government as the counsel in Botswana, and he didn't recuse himself. So we're digging into this, and there's going to be more on it. So we see who these people are, what they're trying to do, why they're trying to do it. And I see that they're going to have to, as Lynn said, when her first speech came after she was arrested, and it was to deal with the coming of the fascist state, she said there are people in other communities within America have known and felt the boot of the fascist state for a long time, and now the fascist state is coming to white people, me.
Mm.
And so here she is. She's seeing the double standard. She defended the Black Liberation Army. Sekou Odinga, all of the fine names and our liberation fighters, and they hate her for that.
Mm. Didn't she defend a member of the Black Panther Party?
Oh, yeah, she defended several members of the Black Panther Party and the BLA also,
mm-hmm.
and the Ohio 7. We could go on a list here of who she defended. She speaks out on behalf of Leonard Peltier, on behalf of the American Indian Movement, on behalf of Ward Churchill. She's that type of person. And they fingered her. Now, I don't know how. Now, I've been black all my life in America, and it seems that that double standard doesn't bother them at all. But now we have a white woman who is doing time and who has helped black people, has worked with the liberation struggle. Are they going to continue that double standard? Well, it's going to get curiouser. But as we finished last time, I write your letters to Lynn. Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007, and 53504-054, 53504-054, at 2S, that's for 2 South. Get those letters going because you're making them crazy, because they know that people are interested in the case. There's more to come. We're going to put this information up on the website so people can look at it, and there's more shocking things about the judges who are attacking Lynn that you will hear. Thanks again. Carry on, Larry and Reverend.
Okay, go ahead, brother.
No. You go ahead.
I just want to say that, first of all, let me jump back to something that Ralph had referred to earlier. These letters that had cash, and they were sent to Lynn, and with the cash in them, okay, and these letters that asked Lynn about, did she know about left-wing training camps, all of this is a continuation of COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, the program that was specifically set up to frame, discredit, imprison, and in many, many cases, murder political activists. This was the same program that is being continued under the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act is nothing but a continuation of the vicious COINTELPRO program, okay? So I want our listeners to understand, I want them to be clear. You know, having been wrongfully imprisoned myself for 10 years, I understand the despicable things that the authorities do to prisoners, and most particularly political prisoners who are well known to be political. It's all about setting them up and trying to do everything they can to discredit them and to break their spirit. Let's also jump to the fact that let's be crystal clear as to why Lynn Stewart is in prison. And I'm going to take it one step further, Ralph. Forgive me, but I'm going to go there. Lynn is considered by many in this country to be a traitor to her white ethnic group. I don't use the word race because there's only one race on this planet, and that's called human. But
yes,
she is considered to be a traitor to her color, a traitor to her ethnic group. But let me tell you something. Lynn Stewart, this white woman, is not a traitor to anything. She's a shero, a heroine, a shero to all oppressed people, including black, brown, red, yellow, and white peoples, all people who are struggling for true freedom, true economic self-determination, true freedom, okay? Now, she was, in fact, targeted prior to being wrongfully imprisoned. Lynn Stewart was targeted for the purpose of discrediting her, silencing her, and disbarring her because she had the unmitigated audacity to actually defend unpopular clients too vigorously, okay? In other words, to be too honest, to actually tell the truth. And we need to be clear about that. This is why Lynn Stewart is in prison. This is why all of us need to be deeply concerned, because we cannot afford to be the Obamatron. See, Obama is nothing but an extension of a very dangerous Amos and Andy and Kingfish, okay? But unfortunately, he's nothing to laugh at. He's extremely dangerous, as is his Attorney General, Eric Holder, as is Seth Williams, District Attorney in Philadelphia, as are these other Negroidian fascists. And that's why I said fascists, because we are dealing with a 21st century form of unmitigated fascism, okay? I don't care how the corporate media might try to say we're not. All of us everyday people who have to deal with the everyday reality understand this. And Lynn Stewart's case really highlights the fascism that we are now dealing with in this undemocratic society. So that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, well, let me follow up on the COINTELPRO section of this. Every newspaper in the country writes, Lynn Stewart was imprisoned because she passed secret messages to the Sheikh's follower. This is COINTELPRO nonsense. They videotaped her, they audiotaped her, and the only thing they felt that they could possibly criticize her for was she stopped the guards from listening to their conversations. Now, that's what you're supposed to do. The guards nor the prison itself is supposed to listen to your conversation. But yet, in spite of that, COINTELPRO has stuck their nose into the media, or they are the media, and every newspaper that you see that prints and says Lynn Stewart carried secret messages, that is a lie. They couldn't substantiate that. They couldn't find that even by videotaping and audiotaping her conversation. She made a public press release, and the second public press release confirming the first public press release. And yet you see it over and over and over. So when you see that Lynn Stewart carried secrets, then you say to yourself, COINTELPRO, Here they go again. They plant these lies in the media, and the media prints it. And I always say, I write my letter that they do not reprint to the editor, and I'm saying, who is in charge of telling this lie of secret messages? never happened, but they produce it over and over again. So you know how powerful they are in terms of printing the big lie.
Yeah. And, hey, Ralph, you know what you're saying is exactly true, because this is what they do. They use the media to spread actually spreading poison. That's what it's doing into our community, saying that anything that she have done is strictly above the board. But for the simple reason, she was out here defending people who couldn't defend themselves.
Right.
And they couldn't even find people to defend these guys. And she went beyond the call of duty. That's why we have to protect her. I tell you, even when I was in there, they planted a knife in my locker. And what would I be doing with a knife, a shank?
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know how to make a shank. I mean, why would I need, what would I need it for? You know?
That's who they are. This is what they do.
Right.
And somebody says, well, that's what they do. Now, what are we going to do? And I'm asking people to send these letters and stay tuned, because you're going to hear more about the Guantanamo lawyers under the same Patriot Act, under more restrictive SAMs, did everything that a good lawyer should do, and they never got a letter. And how is it that Lynn Stewart got a letter? And you know the other interesting thing? The only newspaper in the country that printed it was the Wall Street Journal. And I would ask newspapers, hey, you have reporters, read the Wall Street Journal report and make comment on it. But they won't do that, because the COINTELPRO, the FBI, the CIA, all of those people tell them what to print and what not to print, but we're going to say it. We're going to put literature out there. We're going to make people look at who the government is. And I know, Larry, you've been going at them about, you know, like a brother. No, that's a terrible thing to say. That makes me a liar. Mr. Obama, the President Obama, we've been trying to tell people about it. And one of the interesting things about that, he goes further to the right than anybody ever dreamt. And I look at the reaction of people who were angry, and I tell you, angry with us, because we put up a Cynthia McKinney sign during the, you know, like election campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We have great faith in the electoral process. We have great faith in the idea if you present facts and programs to people, they will make the right choice. Well, we were not able to do that, but people had warned me, you know, be careful with that Cynthia McKinney sign in front of your house. And it went about 20 feet across the front of the house, about 3.5 feet high. You know, we support Cynthia McKinney. Only one of five people who is not hijacked by the corporations and the American-Israel agreement corporate company that they have. Our government has been hijacked. Cynthia McKinney was one of the people who put out positive programs, who made positive statements, and they got rid of her. And we were told to be careful. And I'm saying, you can't be careful about the truth. And nowadays, some of the same people who were angry and they'd look at the sign, I ask them, well, they don't have anything to say. And now we have to get them to start seeing what we saw a year ago, a year and a half ago. And it's
Yes, and the thing is that, let me jump on this. One, as far as again, going back to COINTELPRO and Lynn Stewart and Mumia Abdul-Jamal and Leonard Peltier and hundreds, if not thousands, of other political prisoners in this country, we have to understand that the corporate media, I repeat, the corporate media, ABC, CBS, NBC, yes, PBS, they're all corporate media. PBS says they just have corporate sponsors. What the hell is a corporate sponsor? It's a okay, I mean, come on, people. But anyway, the bottom line is this, that the corporate media in this country is nothing more than the fifth column, and by that I mean the arm, the wing of whatever party is in power, okay? And that's what we're dealing with. The corporate media's job is to misinform, to disinform, and to omit the truth. Again, misinform, disinform, and to omit the truth. The job of the media is supposed, and I repeat, supposed to be to inform the people, okay, which is exactly the opposite of what this media does, and to do so in such a way that people can make informed decisions. We are living in a de facto, I'm going to say this, folks, a de facto, which simply means in reality, a de facto fascist 21st century state. Okay, people think of fascism as stormtroopers marching down the street. But what is more dangerous and more insidious about this form of fascism is that it first, as any fascism does, it first takes root in the minds of people. And in other words, people's minds are manipulated and controlled, which is precisely what this corporate media is about. It is not merely Len Stewart or Mumia Abdul-Jamal or countless other former, okay, members of the Black Panther Party, who, by the way, as you mentioned, Ralph, Len defended vigorously members of the Black Panther Party, and being a former party member, obviously, I have love and respect for Lynn, for that sister, and I use the word sister deliberately, okay, because she knew what she was doing, and she did it anyway, all power to the people. But the bottom line is this: we have an obligation and a responsibility to defend Lynn Stewart, because by defending Lynn Stewart, by standing up and saying, the hell with this, we will not allow this, what we are really doing is defending ourselves. Okay? That's my point.
Wow. And that's quite a point, too, young man. Hey, I must confess that I really didn't get a chance to know Lynn Stewart. Only way I really got a chance to, I had read about her a couple of different articles, but Larry, you introduced me to her, and I tell you, this is an occasion for us to really reach out to her, and for the people and all the listeners that we have, I expect people to write her. I expect people to tell her that she is a hero. Hero. She's all that. And I think that we have to push this. And that's why the program is so important today, because it's all about Lynn.
Well,
it's all about Lynn Stewart. That's who we're going to talk about today. And we want people to write her, tell her, look her up on the internet. We want people to go beyond the call of duty and do whatever you can, even if you have to send a few dollars to her. Do that. But don't send money. Send a money order.
Yeah, well, see, even to the degree that we are doing, telling people the truth, we are taking a weapon away from the government, the misgovernment, the corporations that manipulate us. We take power from them every time somebody learns a fact, because as Steve Biko said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of oppressed people.
That's right.
We can take people's minds away from the oppressor by bringing them the truth, as you have been doing for years, Reverend Pinkney. I learned about you from Larry, and I says, well, he's doing his job, taking the people's minds away from the oppressor, and every mind that you take away from them weakens that system that they have that's destroying us. So right on, and one of the stories I was telling a story this afternoon about Lynn Stewart, being right up on the Canadian border on the St. Lawrence Seaway. Lynn is the type of person, she's not just a lawyer, she's not just a show person, she is the person she is as a lawyer. And we were dealing with an Amish group in the North Country, and Lynn, being the librarian, would take books to the young people in the family, the Amish family. And one day we drove by, it was a summer day, and the wife says, you know, Lynn, my husband is upset, but he doesn't want to say anything to you, because the children must work in the summertime, getting the plants and doing the things, and in the fall, and you bring these books, which takes them away from their work. So she said, gee, you know, like that's their way of life, and she stopped doing it. So one Christmas Eve, she says, we have to stop by the army. She says, I've been collecting books. I'm going to drop these books off. So we happened to go, and you know, you're in Detroit there, you're in Ann Arbor, you know, sudden changes of weather. We got a sudden change of weather, and we got a most outrageous snowstorm, and I'm looking out the window, and Lynn is there with the books, and they're waiting for her husband to come home in his horse and carriage, and it's getting later and later, and the snowstorm is getting worse and worse, and I said, Lynn, you know, it's bad out there. We had better get started because we had to come down from the North Country to New York City. And when the husband didn't show up, and she says he must have stopped someplace in a hotel in this terrible snowstorm. And I said to Lynn, we just have to leave the books and trust that she'll be able to explain these books. It's snow time. I don't know what work he had set up for them. And we left. And somebody says, you know, you have to tell that story about Lynn, who she is. Now, who were we going to impress with that? No one. She wanted the kids to have the books. So she was going to wait in this snowstorm. And, of course, I was the one who had to do the driving, you know. And I'm saying, I couldn't even go because it was off the main highway. And I was looking at the telly poles. And as we're driving down the road and I'm peering and going slow, and she says, well, that's one thing off my mind because that's been bothering me since the summer when her husband said, don't bring those books. And so she worried about that. She worried about those kids. And that's who she is. When she tells the truth and when she would get young men who were caught up in this economic conundrum we have called capitalism, she would say, this was the program for you the day you were born. And you hit the lottery. Because I'm going to do the law thing for you, and I'm going to give you a political education, so pay attention. And if you don't think that makes her a target, then I have this bridge down here. Tell you, it's called the Brooklyn Bridge. And if you're not hip to that, you know, like maybe I can talk to you.
Right. So, hey, Ralph, tell us a story about one of the cases that she took.
Oh, wow, she took so many. Wait, let me give you
a think of a good one that you could think of.
Okay, here's a good one. These things that happen in all communities, and this particular case I was thinking of is a dear friend of ours, a political friend of ours who has been a great teacher and a supervisor, was teaching in a high school, was the principal of a high school, and one of her female students, one of her fine students, said she had a terrible problem and she had to talk to her about it. And when she spoke to her, the problem was that her father, who was accused and of raping his children, and she was one of them. And someone killed the father, and her boyfriend was named. Now, I was in the office, and it was a terrible storm, one of those fall nights of rain. And we got a phone call from Miss Davis. She called. We were working late. We always work late. And she says, you know, like I have a problem, and I'm going to send these people to see you, and I'm going to come with them because they need you. So we waited, and they came in the office. It was right on the Hudson River, and you know about being on the river, rainy, cold, wet. They were all, you know, like soaked cats when they came in.
Mm.
They sat down and told this story. And the mother said, at the end of the story, we don't have any money. And Lynn Stewart says, well, you have come highly recommended by Miss Davis, who has worked in the movement for many a year. So that's enough. And to make a long story short, we won. And they went on to have four children. And, you know, and I think Lynn, and we used to try to keep clients from seeing her because she would admit, she'd say, when some grandmother came in and said, listen, I don't know if my grandson is guilty or not. He's been charged with this terrible crime, and I just know he needs a good lawyer. And Lynn would say, you know, I'm not a legal aid. I have to be paid for work. And they'd say, oh, yes, Ms. Stewart, I'm prepared. And Lynn would say, I know when she took out that little wallet that was wrinkled and old, whatever was in there was the fee.
Mm-hmm.
And took the fee, and sometimes we'd see people come in, and we'd almost try to lock the door. Don't let them get in there with Lynn, you know, because if it's one of those cases that must be taken, she's going to take it. And while she was doing the Shakes case, she had over 200 cases.
Wow.
The real criminals out here would say they would wait in jail 2 years, 2.5 years to go to trial. They were waiting for Lynn.
Mm.
And she would go from trial to trial. Lawyers would call up, judges would call up other judges and say, is she close to the end? Because
mm-hmm.
the day she finished, she had to go to the next trial.
Mm.
And she was backed up for 2.5 years. This is how people who were in trouble wanted her, because she would tell the truth, she would give it her all, and sometimes I'd say to her in the middle of the night, you know, Lynn, you're not accused of this crime. Why are you keeping me up all night talking about what we must do?
Yeah.
I must find out. But she felt that she was accused. She was the only thing between the government and the people she was defending, and she would say, they got to get by me, and I'm going to make it tough. And so,
and that's the point. That's the point, Ralph.
What?
She's the people's lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You keep using that word correctly, my brother, correctly. You use the word people because Lynn felt, as Ernesto Che Guevara said, when you see an injustice, if you feel that injustice, then you are a revolutionary.
Yes.
And this is why we love Lynn. Because Lynn felt, that's why she said to you in the middle of the night, when you said to her, hey, you're not accused of this, her reply to you was, oh, but I am. For
yes.
I am all that stands between them and the government. So that is why we must defend and support her. This is what, it brings chills to me when I hear this story. Go ahead, my brother.
I'm going to give one more story. We lived in the projects, you know, in the Lower East Side. And a young man we knew got swept up in a major narcotics deal. Now, everybody knew, it says, this young man never had 50 cents to rub against another. So his mother came to Lynn and says, Lynn, this terrible thing has happened for my son. Well, Lynn went in, you know, no pay, no sit down with the contract. And in a week, he was out because he was nowhere. He had nothing to do with this deal. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, the person who was the kingpin said, what is this? This young man is in here with us. One day, next week, he's out. I want that lawyer. So his sister, I believe, or his mother came to see Lynn. So you know, Lynn took on the case, and the case was proceeding, and we're doing work. And I'm doing my thing. I find out that one of the problems here is one of the people who had been let out, one of the women, was working with the police.
No.
And yet she was coming to the defense meetings. And I just happened to come upon her one Friday night in a pizza shop doing a deal, but the police were outside, and she was in defense meetings. And Lynn says, hey, this is illegal stuff. They have somebody in defense meetings that's cooperating with them. And the moment they start cooperating, they're not supposed to be in defense meetings. So now we're proceeding with this, and one day we find out in court that they had substituted an attorney for Lynn. And they told this gentleman, you know, if we demand that the lawyer give us information and she is not the object of the investigation, the law says she has to tell what she knows. Now, Lynn did not know these people. She did not know this gentleman. All he knew was that Lynn was a great lawyer. So he says, well, I guess I had better cooperate. So he cooperated. And when Lynn found out what was going on, this is a speech. I say, you know, like they record them. You have to hear the speech. And when she said to the judge and the DA, if you think for 1 minute that I'm going to support you against these poor saps who are trying to get into the economy any way they can, you are very mistaken. And she slammed her book down on the desk and started to walk out. Well, anyway, the case was the Dominic Maldonado case, so he started screaming, Lynn, don't leave me. I didn't know. And she turned around and said, you didn't trust me, so therefore I could never trust you. She walked out.
So you're right. Go ahead, and brother.
The end of the story was that she was brought before the courts for refusing to testify before the grand jury, even though it was the law. And she says, I did not become a lawyer to become a snitch.
Yeah.
I would never have known anything about this young man unless he had come to me for help. He did, and I refused. So this case went back and forth for 10 years. Several times she went to the appellate division back and forth, and they dismissed it in the interest of justice. Now, this young man went to jail. He cooperated. He got a life sentence, and he committed suicide in jail by taking rat poison. This is, and they did a television thing of it, but it wasn't quite true to what really happened. But this is the type of attorney Lynn is, and she stood her ground. She said, I would not know anything about this man unless he came to me because he was in trouble. And now the law says that I have to tell everything I know that he told me to defend him. And I refuse because it's a bad law. And we were going to take it to trial. And I said to Lynn, I said, we're going to subpoena every attorney that did this. Well, a lot of great attorneys went before the grand jury and testified. And nobody heard about it because that's a terrible thing to do. So I says, no, we're going to take this thing to trial. And lawyers would come to me and they'd say, Ralph, don't let her do it. And I'm saying, why are they worried about Lynn? They're not worried about Lynn. They're worried about if he goes to trial and we subpoena everybody that it was used on, they will be exposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know something? They got more important people in Albany than the judge. So I said, you know, stick to your guns. We'll fight this. And then they dismissed in the interest of justice. They dismissed in their own basic interest. And this is who Lynn Stewart is. She was ready to drop her career because it was immoral to do what this law said. And
we need more lawyers like Lynn. They don't make them like that, Larry. I say this. I haven't had a lawyer yet that'll stand up like that. Not one. If the fans or anybody wanted them to stand up and make a confession or whatever it might be, they'd be glad to do it. You see,
well, one of the funny things that happened is during the argument in the appellate division in Albany in the state of New York, one of the prosecutors said, "Well, judge," and this was before I think it was a three or a five panel judge, and they says, "Well, judge, what if every lawyer decided to be moral like Lynn Stewart? When the whole room broke in laughter, you know, like a government, they gaveled the place quiet. Oh, we'll take a 10-minute break." And they all laughed, and then he says, okay, the judges came back, and they gaveled the court to order. And they says, okay, let's continue. And the prosecutor said this took up just where she had left off. What if every lawyer decided to be moral and the head judge hit the gavel down and says, get away from that. Don't talk about that. It's like, are you crazy? There's only one of them. So it was actually funny, but it was sad that it was funny. You're not going to get anybody to stand up like that.
This is again, Ralph, you've used a couple of words that I want to make sure our listening audience really, really thinks about. You use a word called the law or a term called the law, but even more importantly, you used a word called justice.
Mm.
Now, the difference between Lynn Stewart and these bourgeois snakes out there who call themselves lawyers, the difference is Lynn Stewart stood for and still stands for justice.
Mm.
You see, when the law ceases, people should read the preamble to the U.S. Constitution. When the government and the law cease to serve the needs and the will of the people, the preamble to the Constitution, to paraphrase it, says very clearly that it is time to do what? It is time to replace that government and certainly to change that law. And that's what Lynn Stewart was and is about, justice. And that's what we as people, everyday black, brown, red, yellow, and white people need to be about, justice. They only, by they, I'm talking about now the corporate military complex government that we have, they only talk about laws when they can be used against the people. But guess what? They never, never talk about justice. Because justice is not their forte. Justice is not what they are about. But that is what Lynn Stewart is about. And again, I say to her, as a former Black Panther Party member, all power to the people. All power to you, Sister Lynn. All power to you.
One more thing that I have to say. Lynn ordered me from her prison cell on a visit, I think it was 3 weeks ago. She said, Ralph, I don't want any more demonstrations or forums for Lynn Stewart alone. Anytime you do a forum, she says it must be for Lynn Stewart, Mumia, Leonard, Sekou, all political prisoners, all issues, immigrants. She says you tie it up because they're all tied in.
That's
so it. She says, I'm not going to take advantage of my white skin privilege and have my money in the prison, you know, and my letters and my mail, my commissary. She says, we must do this. We must make this struggle for everyone. Now, this makes it real. And as one of the Jeff Mackler, a Communist Party in San Francisco, said, he sat in court and he was listening, and Lynn was testifying on the witness stand. And the prosecutor says, well, just tell us what type of inmate that you support and you're fighting the government. And she said, Mumia Abu-Jamal. And he says, her life is at stake here. And she came right out with it, never hesitated. This is the people. This is a representative of the people who have been oppressed from 1619 to the day. What is my calling? This is what I think we have to defend. And he says, you know, like... he said that was the end for him. He would never look beyond Lynn Stewart for a more moral, more feisty, more aggressive, more honest, truth-telling people. When all the chips were down, she said, Mumia Abu-Jamal. And the other thing she said, and I bring it up with the case of one of the judges trying to increase her sentence, he should have recused himself because he was the main counsel for Botswana, under apartheid South Africa. And Lynn Stewart says, I am not of the Martin Luther King persuasion. I am of the Nelson Mandela persuasion. I will stay in jail because I will never renounce the right to armed struggle and for liberation. Therefore, these opposing views, he's an apartheid representative, and Lynn Stewart was the Nelson Mandela, you know, like of this philosophy. He should have said, I cannot handle this case, but he's leading the charge. Lynn Stewart must get more time. And I'm saying, with this crack, with this thing that has happened with the lawyers in Guantanamo, and this double standard that is so obvious, what are they going to do? Well, we have to exploit it. And bloggers out there, people on email, people who do that thing, get that story out there, the double standard. You want to read the article, go to the Wall Street Journal, and the people, the lawyers there, do not seem to be backing down. They say, yeah, we did it, and I'm glad. So that puts it right in the government's face. What is Mr. Obama and his Justice Department going to do? As he said, all of the criminal acts of the Bush administration and Cheney and Rove and all of these Geithner, all of these scoundrels, he says, we're going to put it behind us. And yet, here's Lynn Stewart.
Hey, tell us how. Tell them again how they can write Lynn Stewart.
Write to LYNNE Lynn Stewart STEWART MCC. That's Manhattan Correctional Center. Capital letter M, capital letter C, capital letter C. 150 Park Row, New York, New York 10007. 2S, that's for 2 South. The number is 53504-054. And put your return address on it because she'll read every piece of mail that gets there and she will answer you. She won't answer any damn fool questions about what training, leftist training camp, you suggest that we attend. But you write the letter, Lynn Stewart will answer, and in an honest, forthright way, and she will thank you from writing the letter, for writing the letter, because the government is as opposed or as different as Obama has told it, is a transparent government. It is not transparent. But we want to be clearly transparent to the government what we feel about Lynn Stewart. And that is by just write your letter. Put a postcard in. I'm thinking about you, Lynn. Here's why I am. Here's my problem. Please answer. And she will love it. And this is what keeps her going. She says, in spite of my condition, where I am, I'm in prison looking at 30 years, trying to fight to keep it to 28 months when I should never be in here at all. But as long as the people are struggling with me, she says, I am happy with my condition. So remember that, write, look it up on the web. Look up Larry, fill me in.
The Black Commentator.
Larry's.
Yeah, www.blackcommentator.com. And once you go on there, you can put in Lynn Stewart's name. You'll see the articles that I've had the honor of writing about Lynn Stewart. There's also another a person by the name of Stephen Lindman who just wrote a fantastic article about Lynn Stewart on Op-Ed News. Just came out late last night, early this morning. There's information out there. Spread it. Read it. Be aware of it because you'll be aware of it as if your very life depends on it because guess what? It does.
Yes.
And also, let's whoop Whirlpool with Reverend Pinkney.
Absolutely. But look, but you know, to me, Lynn Stewart is even more important than Whirlpool. Whirlpool is something that I know that it takes everybody to handle. But what we want to do now, we want to rally the support behind Lynn Stewart. And I feel that we have to do this. I feel that, you know, I can feel it in my bones that this is something that we have to take up and we have to talk more about and people have to keep spreading the word. And that's what it's all about. And if we don't do that, we're not doing what we're supposed to do. We're letting her down. And all the hard work that she have done, she have stepped to the plate and did more. I mean, she have done more for me being in prison. Then I had lawyers who actually was out here thinking that they're trying to help. Yep. And I appreciate her because she has given me a whole new outlook on lawyers. And I know, like they say, you can always tell a lawyer because he got his hand in somebody else's pocket. You know, they do this stuff like that. You know, that's how you could tell a lawyer. You see a lawyer walking down the street, he got his hands in somebody else's pocket. Or you see a person, you have to call him a lawyer. But hey, I want y'all to know that we love Lynn Stewart. And look, we got 2 minutes to go. I'm gonna Larry, you take a minute, and Ralph, you take the other minute. I don't need nothing. The only thing I want to do is throw a shout out to my grandson Blake Williams out of Columbus, Ohio Independence High School. Keep your head up, Blake. And our son, I want Kaya. I want all y'all from Columbus. I want y'all to hang in here because I'm expecting big things from y'all. I'm expecting y'all to be true soldiers. Go ahead, Larry. Go ahead with it.
All I have to say is this. The struggle for Lynn Stewart is a people struggle. The
That's
struggle
right.
for Lynn Stewart is a struggle for all people, all oppressed people. It is a struggle for we ourselves. We have the duty, the responsibility, the obligation. We must do this because by doing this, we defend the best in ourselves by standing with this sister, standing with Lynn Stewart. There is no option in this struggle but to win. There is no other option but to win.
And
wow.
I want to add to that when Lynn, one of the things that people said was strange, Lynn was recognized as one of the top 10 lawyers in New York City, and people would wait 2 years to get her to go to trial, and she's destitute. She was broke. And I says, if that doesn't tell you who she is, and this was the guy said when he sat there and says, well, I'll be, he just assumed that, you know, like people who have that type of expertise, they're rich in this society, not Lynn Stewart. And we used to say we have to keep her away from people because if somebody had a compelling case, you would bet your bottom dollar and no dollar at all that Lynn Stewart would take it and work at it. And when she was asked once, Lynn, how do you do that? And her answer was, you know, when anybody walks into the office and I take the case, I try to think of it like this. And if my mother were dying and I had to get this case to get the money to save her life, this is the energy I'm putting into it. And she says, well, my mother isn't dying. I don't need the money to save her life. But this is the energy that I put. This is how I psych myself up to take the case. And that was one of the things that I just looked at her and I'm saying, yes, that's the way she does it. It's like the most important thing.
You got 15 seconds, Ralph. Say what you got to say.
That's it. Support
that's it?
Those who support us. Lynn,
that's
support
right.
us. Let's
and
support
we want
us.
Everybody to know that we love Lynn Stewart. We love Lynn Stewart, and we plan to stand up and fight for her. And this is a message to the government. We're letting them know that we are going all the way with Lynn, and that is all the time we have today. God
bless you, brother.
We'll see y'all next week, and I will be happy, happy to see both of y'all back next week because you have made my day today.
Thank you so much.
I mean, you're good when y'all on the show. Y'all just give me inspiration.
And you're going to see the name of the show on lynnstewart.org on that website. That information where they can go to and hit their computer and get these programs that we've been talking about, you know, like over the months. And thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, listen, y'all have a very good Sunday. And, hey, God bless both of y'all and just hang in there. And I'm with y'all all the way.
And
right back at you, brother.
All right. Talk to y'all later.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.